Welcome to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner. Today's show is brought to you by Allshred Mobile Document Destruction. They sell security. The Frederick Faith Debate is designed to be an open and honest forum for our local faith community leaders to share and discuss their views of the truth. Thomas Jefferson said once, the clash of ideas is the sound of freedom, and it's in that spirit that we seriously wrestle with important ideas and might even disagree with one another. The hope is that through our wrestling, you will develop a better understanding of the truth about the most important issues that face us in this world. And a reminder that the views expressed by the participants in the show are the views of the participants in the show only. Last week, if you were listening, you heard us talk a bit about fairness and justice and the role that the church should play and how that coincides with the role the government plays and that sort of thing. We didn't really feel like we finished, not that you would ever finish a topic, I suppose. We didn't feel like we came to any sense of closure, so we're going to pick that back up again this week with the same participants we had last week. Jonathan Schweitzer, the pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel, is here. Tony Fish, the spiritual leader at Unity Church in Frederick, and John Morehouse, the senior minister at Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Frederick. Last time we ended with a round robin. Everybody had a chance to give a parting shot, and Tony didn't have a chance. We're going to let her start, but first I want to kind of reset up what we're talking about here a little bit. Is life fair? And what role should we have in ensuring that life be as fair as possible? We as individuals, we as part of the government process, and we in our church bodies and organizations. There was some disagreement last time, Jonathan Schweitzer, with the view that the government should be less involved and it should be up to the individual, and the church should be working to motivate the individual to do the right thing. Religious institutions. Yeah, I don't want to. I'm trying to synopsize as best as I can. Yeah. And John Morehouse and Tony Fish didn't exactly agree with each other, but were more along the lines, perhaps, of thinking that that the government should be more involved and the church's role maybe should be toward prodding the government to do what it should be doing on behalf of society as a whole. I hope I've done fair justice in wrapping that up. If I haven't, you'll have ample opportunity to correct me. Anyway, so that being the setup, Tony, it's interesting because you have a tendency to agree with both Johns that are here.
I have.
So we're going to put you on the spot and give you a chance to think through publicly this issue for yourself.
All right. And that's a very good, I think, summary for me. I'm finding myself agreeing with parts of both of the positions of John and John, because I think we all come from a place of wanting the best for this country and for wanting for the best for the people. I would disagree. Let me start by, while I agree with some of the things that John Schweitzer is saying, let me start with what I disagree with John on. John said that biblically, and for the evangelical Christian, we humans are limited and we start out in the hole. We start out with sin. It is my belief and from the faith tradition that I come from that we start out good, that there are no limits for humankind, so long as humankind acknowledges that over everything there is this power that is beyond all things and in all things, there is God.
So and then do we become bad then?
Or? By our choices in this life, we make wrong choices. We make as individuals and as collectives, we make wrong choices. And when we make wrong choices, it moves us away from that connection with God, that oneness in Godhead. So we start out with an amazing amount of power. We don't believe we have it, and therefore we don't. Once we begin to think that we don't, once we begin to think that we, in fact, start in the hole, we've caught ourselves in that hole. So when we look at individually and we look at it from the place of solving our problems, one of the first things that we have to believe in is that there is a possible that there is a solution that we can all come to work with. That we have to look at both grace and works. It's not an either or. Without grace, works don't happen, and without works, grace isn't manifested. It's not an either-or process. And so for me to say that I am only saved by grace takes away the hands and the feet and the mouth and the ears of God that have been manifested in me or in any of us to do the work. if I do works without that underlying understanding that it is not I, but the Father who does them, which is what Jesus tells me, then my works can be misguided. They're not going to reach out to the heart of the individual, to the Christ in the individual. And I believe that that's something that we as a democracy have lost. I think that our founding fathers had an understanding of that relationship, and I believe that over time we've made bad choices in our government and in our day-to-day lives and in our churches, where we have lost that centeredness. And until we find it back, we're going to struggle. So there's my response on that particular piece.
Okay. Now, John, do you want to... Cause I'm not entirely sure you would disagree with some of what she said. The idea that, grace without works, faith without works is a dead faith and all those sorts of things. And I'm wondering, for the context of what we're talking about here and fairness and distribution of wealth and all those kinds of justice, equality, egalitarian type issues, does it matter if we start in the hole or if we dig ourselves into the hole? I mean, the end result, in a practical sense, is that we're all in a hole right now, right? So I'm not sure any practical outworking as far as what we should be doing.
Well, you think it makes a difference? Well, I would say that it makes a difference in this sense. And again, I think you have to excuse me, I say this in the kindest of ways, that I think it tends towards an arrogance for us to not acknowledge the reality of how sinful we are now, and that I think then that it tends towards a control mentality coupled with that arrogance if we start to feel like we've got to make the difference now ourselves, and we have to finish the job, because it's a little bit like what happened to all of us when we were growing up. And as little kids, elementary school, we tended to need our parents to be on top of us to do everything. But for most of us, when we hit the teenage years and the hormones kicked in, we began to realize that we were thinking for ourselves. And if anybody tried to control us and force us to do something, we reacted against it. And we were like, you know what? Get off of me. I'll figure out the right way to do it. And I believe that while every society that has chosen to attempt a government solution to poverty has tended to, as a result, undermine the productivity of the society. Obviously, all communist nations on the face of the planet are have proven over the last 40 to 80 years that this is the case. The only one that seems to be otherwise is China, and China has embraced a market mentality with a lot of things that that somehow seems to transcend every other communist approach to control as a form of taking care and distributing wealth. And my concern is always this, that if we take away, justice has to do with this. If I work hard and I'm kind to people, there's going to be a benefit to it. But justice also says this, that if I'm rude to people and if I treat people wrongly, there's going to be a consequence to this. And any kind of economic justice that doesn't take those things into play is going to end up numbing our senses to reality. That we got to be kind, we got to care about one another. We have to win people's hearts. We're not all children. We don't need the government to treat us all like children. We need the government to treat us like adults and allow us to choose what's right. And so that's why I think Alex Tocqueville said it best, that the way our government is set up, in this sense, I'd agree with Tony. I think it doesn't work outside of people being good. But I'd even go farther than that. I'd say that there is no government on the face of the planet that works outside of people being good. And as soon as we try to force them to do what is good, we lose their hearts.
I'm not talking about
and that undermines
I'm not talking
society.
About totalitarianism here, John. I'm not talking about a government that takes over the needs of all of its people. I'm assuming that there's a basic morality. And in fact, in my tradition, we have the opposite view. We believe that people are born inherently good and that they are inherently good, and then they are prone to making mistakes that you might call sin, but that's not the condition by which we're born, and that we need to return to the state by which God loves us and creates us. And the government's role is not to treat us like children, it is to treat us like adults, but it is to take care of its people. And the problem that I see happening so often is that we don't seem to have any kind of effective system for taking care of the people who can't take care of themselves, through no fault of their own, I might add. There are plenty of examples of people who have gotten by in the world by abusing the system, sure enough. But there are people who have not worked and who have gotten by and made a lot of money at the expense of other people. I would only look at things like pornography, for instance, as an example of that and the industry around that. And what is the role of a government if it isn't to protect its population, its populace, its citizenry? And you know, I'm not saying that I'm all for big government. I think there's big government and then there's good government. And I'm for good government, which I don't think we have right now. And as long as we don't tackle that reality and begin to look at how government can actually work for its citizens, which I think is what the founding fathers had in mind, quite frankly, then I don't think we'll ever see any kind of solution to the problem. Individual human beings can do a lot. In their local communities, they're very powerful. But there comes a time when you need real money and real solutions to solve real problems. And we can't just expect the goodness and the largesse of good faith-believing people when 50% of our country is not, doesn't have any faith tradition at all.
Yeah, I want to respond to that. Apparently, George Bush and John Kerry, in their giving charitably, went like this. John Kerry gave next to no money from his personal income to charity. George Bush gave 30% of his personal income to charity. And there was a big media rebuke in lieu of the tsunami that America wasn't giving enough money to help out. But what the media kept ignoring was that the individuals in the United States were giving so much just out of the largesse of their heart that it blew away what the government was giving. It just totally overshadowed what the government can do. And this is my point, is that I find that as long as we believe that we can't trust people to do the right thing, they won't, and they'll leave the government to do it. But in this sense, I think potentially, I believe people are better than maybe you do. I think if we let the government get out of the picture, that we would be surprised at how much the people of the United States will give out of the goodness of their heart to take care of these things. In fact, In fact, I think what you'll find is that the more the government does it again, the more people will just feel like it's not their responsibility, and so they won't do it. And the tsunami, I think, is a huge example of that.
Well, Tony's been itching to talk, so.
Yes. I find that interesting, John. I did not get from the press that this idea that the American people did not give. What I saw was that the American people, in fact, did amazingly roll out into the tsunami. And so I think that that
it's
acknowledgement is
and it's their education.
It's that acknowledgement. They spent their time. We've people gone over. Everybody's done that. And I believe that there's a difference between American people responding to crisis, which we tend to do beautifully. We respond to the one-time big crisis. What we're not responding to are the kids who don't, in our neighborhood, in Frederick, who don't have enough to eat in the morning, who relied upon the Head Start program because both of their parents worked in order to make a minimum wage. They had to stay at home or with somebody. There is no Head Start program for them to go to, so that they can get a meal and start education. Their money was cut for that, and we're not stepping in to do that, because that's something we see every day. The kids that don't have a place to go after school or until their parents get home, they roam the streets. We cut off funding for the basketball clinic that was happening in the local gym until midnight so that the kids had a place to go. It's the everyday poverty, the everyday holes that we don't respond to well as a people. I absolutely agree with you. We respond to the crisis. It's the things that happen to us on a day to day that we don't respond well to. And when the government cuts back on it, we don't pick up and fill in the holes. Government consistently, this budget that George Bush has got, is cutting significantly out of social services. Granted, there is waste. My sister worked in Social Security for a long time, and she says, there's waste there. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You fix the issues, but you don't keep cutting the social service projects that'll help these young kids, these mothers who have no place to go, and expect the community to be able to do it, because it's bigger than the community. And we're not doing that. So I'm not arguing our largesse. What I'm arguing is that we don't pick up the slack when the government consistently cuts social services to spend it on things that I don't pay. I would prefer my tax dollars not go to. And yet it always seems to go there. So I you know, that's my issue with that. Okay.
You're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. The voice you just heard, Tony Fish, the spiritual leader at Unity Church in Frederick. Also with us, John Morehouse, the senior minister at Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Frederick, and Jonathan Schweitzer, who's a pastor at Crossroad Valley Chapel. I'm Troy Skinner. I want to take everything we've talked about in the last like 10 minutes and try to bring it to a kind of a big picture idea again. It's kind of my job, I guess, to try to get us back into the big picture scheme of things. Is the issue that the government isn't doing what the government should be doing, or is the issue that the individuals who make up society aren't doing what they should be doing? Do we want the government to be having that responsibility? Because when and should the church be somehow synthesized with the government to make that happen? Because when the church and the government merge and become one, sometimes horrific things happen. The Inquisition, the Crusades, things like that happen. So they should be separate. So do we really want the government to even be involved in these service elements and these spiritual things that the church really should be driving? Is it a question of the government didn't send enough money and commit enough money for welfare and Head Start programs and those sorts of things? Or is the issue that not enough people who have their fannies in pews aren't reaching in their pockets and giving more than a dollar when the basket comes by?
Both.
Ooh, yes, I would say, exactly. I would say yes to both of those. I don't think the government is doing enough, and I don't think the individuals are doing enough. And so there are different roles for each of them to play. There are different roles for each. The individuals need to be focused on what's happening in their communities and get out and work in those communities and do that. And here's where I'm absolutely sure that John and I will disagree, John Schweitzer and I will disagree, without strings attached. You don't have to accept my Jesus to take my food. You don't have to accept my faith in order for me to help you. And so many times in the Christian faith, we're willing to give, but you got to come listen to the message, and we'd really prefer you to accept our belief. That's where I find.
Well, let me
when
have
you
a,
have, yeah. When you
let
have
me
a
have John
love,
respond to that, and then we'll have John Morehouse have a chance to jump in as well. He's kind of been stuck in the corner here for a minute. We'll rectify that.
Definitely from a Christian perspective, we are of the opinion that the eternal soul is way more important than what happens here in our lives, and that our lives here are but a shadow and pass away, and that to have our relationship with God right, so that eternity spent with Him far outshadows it. So certainly, from a conservative Christian perspective, the preaching of the gospel will always be right next to whatever we do to give to the poor, and we celebrate that because we really, really care that God had the relationship with us that He has always desired for eternity. Coupled with that, I think, is this question of whether or not I lost the other thought. There was another thought there having to do with I forget.
But while that thought comes back to you, I want you to maybe directly respond. Is it a fair characterization of the mainline Christian denominations, the evangelical Christian denominations? Is it a fair characterization to say that they'll only give to the poor if they'll sit down and listen to an hour and a half presentation on the life of Jesus Christ?
That's not what I said.
But but the idea of there being strings attached. Is it fair to say that you can have this can of food, but you know, you got to listen to what I have to say about Jesus, or will they just give the can of food? Do you think that's fair or not?
I think that it is most likely that across the board, conservative Christians, when they give charity, are going to look for that to be an opportunity for them to tell people, you know, God loves you and He's made a way for you to be at one with him through Christ. I think that, it's a fair characterization to say that our message is going to follow our act of love and be closely connected to it. Whether or not we would require you to accept it in order to receive, I think I don't think the requirement to accept it would be there.
Yeah. And I said that I didn't mean that it happens. I didn't say that it happens in all cases. So there is a tendency to attach the message to the gift. Okay. And in some cases, from experience, it's been a pretty heavy string. And that's not, I would not claim that for all of them, but there have been in situations that's been a pretty heavy string that the guilt laid on you not accepting and accepting my gift is pretty heavy to bear. So I would want us to be careful about that, okay? And that's where I was going with that one. Not to say that all of them won't give food if you don't listen. But it's that association and the tendency to get heavy on it and lay a guilt.
Well, I promised John Morehouse he'd have a chance to speak after John Switzer, but I totally threw that rule out the window. My apologies, but...
Well, in our tradition, we believe that there should be no strings attached to promoting justice and helping people, period. That you do not, that's not required for you to accept our beliefs. In fact, we are universalists, and we believe that there are many paths to God, not just one. So we wouldn't even begin to prescribe for you what path you're going to take. The point is to help one another. And unlike John, our faith tradition holds that this life is very important, and the here and the now is vital to the continuation of what is good about civilization. So we have a very different way of looking at the world. In fact, our denominational magazine is named The World, and I was told once when I was doing my training that was completely antithetical to other traditions, and I understand that. But the point was, for us, we don't try to figure out what God wants for us. We try to live in a compassionate and kind way towards those other beings that we share the planet with. And that for us means that we uphold and we support the inherent worth and dignity of people. We stand against what is wrong. We do have a morality, and it's pretty obvious when something is wrong. We stand against it, and we do everything we can to speak out against injustice. But ultimately, retribution for that kind of wrong needs to rest with our government. And I'm not a big government person here. I know I'm coming across that way. That's not really what I mean. It is not either or. It is an and. We locally, each of us individually, particularly in our communities, have a responsibility to show God's love for us be the hands of God. And then we have to have some kind of safety net under the whole thing. For when you have those moments, as Tony was putting it so eloquently, when two people are working three jobs and they don't have enough food and they don't have time for their kids because that's the way the system is, weighted against us. And that requires a larger institutional response than a local church can possibly do. And that requires a government being responsible for its people.
Yeah, I was going to respond earlier to the question of government and the institution specifically that is created when it comes to welfare. It's interesting to me that Christian orphanages have often been mocked in society, and I think that there's a tendency to think that if it's a Christian organization, there's something wrong with it, but if there's a government organization, that it has greater likelihood to be a pure organization. I think that's dangerous. I did want to say this in finishing up. I'm of the opinion that God is intimately involved with humanity, and that because of that intimate involvement with humanity, He is literally responding to what we do. And when we choose to not follow Him or do what He wants us to do, He will remove His blessing. And that when we choose to respond to Him and what He's called us to do, that He will, in fact, bring His blessing and bless people phenomenally. In fact, it used to be in this nation with churches that if there was a hurricane or something like that, the pastors would call their people to repentance because God was bringing the famine and those kinds of things. And I literally believe that is still the case today, that God still interacts with us and blesses us and removes that blessing based on how we respond to Him.
Well, John Switzer gets the last word. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Frederick Faith Debate. We'll be back again next week, this same time. If you're a local faith community leader or know one who would like to participate in a future roundtable, please contact me, Troy Skinner, at the offices of WFMD. Also, if you have a topic you'd like to hear discussed, please share that as well. My email address is troyskinner@clearchannel.com. That's TROYSKINNER at clearchannel, all one word, .com. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week, and God bless.